This is Rosie Langhorne, and you're listening to Alex Lefchuk and the team on the Midweek Drive.
Thank you, Rosie.
You open. Now little Timmy got his diploma and little Jimmy got life, and Tamika around the corner just took her cursing off the pipe. The other homie shot the other homie and ran off with his money, and when the other homies heard about it, they thought that it was funny. But who's the dummy? Cause now you done lost a hustler. A down ass brother done been replaced by a buster. And though I got love for you, I know I can't trust you. Cause my crew is rolling hammers and your crew is rolling dusters. And just because of that you act like you don't like a brother no more. I guess that's just the way it go. I ain't trying to preach, I believe I can reach, but your mind ain't prepared. I see you when you get there.
I see you when you get there. If you ever get there, see you when you get there. I see you when you get there. If you ever get there, see you when you get there.
More temptation and faith. I guess we living for the day. I seen a man get swept off his feet by a boy with a situation so twisted. Everybody getting lifted. I'm just trying to take care of my kids and handle my business. Cause it's way too serious, so you gotta pay close attention, so you don't get caught slipping when they come to do all the getting. Life is a big game, so you gotta play it with a big heart. Some of us gotta run a little faster, cause we gotta lay the start. But I'll be a fool to surrender when I know I can be a contender. If everybody's a sinner, then everybody can be a winner. No matter your rag color, deep down we all brothers. And regardless of the time, somebody up there still love us. I'm a scuffle and struggle until I'm breathless and weak. I done strived my whole life to make it to the mountain peak. Always keep reaching, sure to grab on to something. I'll be there when you get there, waiting with the sounds bumping.
See it anthemically going through the system in every sense of the word. Good morning, Andy. Good morning, Arthur. There we are. You see, it's time jumping in. Hello and good afternoon, Andy Brown. Welcome to the production. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much, Alex. Yes, I'm very good. Thank you.
It's been far too long since we've actually co-presented on the airwave system. And I thought whilst we're currently using this connection between Lincoln, Teesside, Hartlepool and Edinburgh, it was only right to actually connect with that. And strangely enough, we mentioned Edinburgh, we also say William Coles. How are you, sir?
Very good shape. Thank you, Alex.
Excellent. Share with us, Andy, initially, what your particular role in life is as an engineer extraordinaire and why you spend an awful lot of time checking out William Coles's hometown.
Well, part of what I do, looking after some of the technical systems on various radio stations, etc., but I do actually have a real job as well in the background, so I do quite a bit of travel up to Edinburgh, and the airport area is one of my areas of work, so I do travel up there quite a lot, and it's a very nice place to visit. So I am very jealous of you, William.
Yeah, the airport area, William. Any thoughts on that?
It's not that great an airport, is it? I mean, it's nice to get out of Edinburgh, but the airport itself, I thought it did fantastically badly in a recent survey for general hanging around and security and all that schlep that you have to go through at the airport. Tell me I'm wrong.
You obviously haven't been comparing it to some of the airports a little bit further south. I'm not going to mention our regional airports here at all.
I mean, you've got your Robin Hood, which I always think is very confusing. You've got your Newcastle. You've got your Teesside. It's very strange, really.
Right. So you're telling me that your airport is worse than my airport?
Everything's subjective, Bill. Everything's subjective.
Okay. That's true.
Anyway, suffice it to say, as ever, looking at your Facebook updates, I see that you've been training your son to effectively put the phone down or indeed answer callers who might claim to be legal people who are requesting finance.
Yes, indeed. I'm surprised he hasn't put the phone down on you. we get so many cold callers that both my sons are under strict instructions that if they pick up the house phone and they don't absolutely recognise the person, know who it is, then they put the phone down. And the last time this happened was about a week ago when a lawyer was after yet more money and decided to call up my house phone and then sent this stroppy email through to me and my brother saying, I called up Bill's home and a young child answered and slammed the phone down on me.
Excellent training.
Exactly. Yes. Says the whole thing there. William, I'm going to mention a few names, and they all connect in a strange way with respect to one of our guests this evening. Carl Gustav Jung, Edgar Allan Poe, Fred Astaire, the wonderful Bob Dylan, Aldous Huxley, Dylan Thomas, and our guest, Randy Nowat. Have you got any ideas in terms of what the connection between those fine folk happens to be?
They've all won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
No. No, they were all actually featured, together with Randy Nowat, on the Sergeant...
Oh, that song, with the one where he's listing all those...
No. You see, you're jumping ahead.
Close.
You see, Andy's got it. He's read the lips. He's seen the whole thing. They were all on the Sergeant Pepper album cover.
Very good.
Better than winning your Nobel Prize, I'd have to say. And a nice teaser to the fact that next week on the Midweek Drive for Siren, Lincoln's First Community Radio Station, and indeed your very own James Cook University Hospital Southside Broadcasting, we will be featuring no less a personage than Louise Harrison, sister of George.
Very good.
Wow.
Yes, whose book I've actually finished reading, My Kid Brother's Band.
Oh.
Which is wonderful. It's a classic, actually. I'd say it's probably the one of the best I've read this year, actually. It's autobiography and biography, and it shares the tales of how she was actually in the States and actually did all the sort of Beatles plugging and coverage for them, kind of enhancing the Beatles crossover to the transatlantic area.
Yeah, so as a Beatles fan, it's an interesting read, isn't it?
And it also gave a number of insights into things which even I wasn't aware of. And I wouldn't say I'm a Beatles expert, but it does sort of open up a whole range of factors. Are you a Beatles fan, Bill?
Yeah, I love them. I mean, only in small doses, though. It's rather like Wagner. I can take them to little bits, one or two songs at a time. Whole gig, too much. Albums, too much.
There we are, exactly. So, Andy, you mentioned that the Fringe has just come to an end. And as I was saying, Bill has been our unofficial correspondent for the whole thing. Is there a sense of sadness now, Bill? Is there a sense of a lacuna, a gap that's actually there that's opened up? Is it a case of, well, there's always 2018?
No, not really sadness. For us folks who live here, it's been great, but we're also licking our lips for the final fireworks display, and off they all go on their merry way, and this city reverts back to normal. Our coffee houses are not packed out. We can get breakfast anywhere, and a short drive no longer takes an hour and a half.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I feel your pain there, William, because when I've had to visit during this time, everywhere is just packed. It is hard work. It's a lovely place to visit, but it becomes stressful.
In fact, I'm surprised, Andy, given the tremendous work you do with our studios here and the magic you bring to bear. I mean, without Andy's digital working things, Bill, you'd just have huge swathes of gap of air. Nothing, actually, during the whole thing would it be going out. But I'm surprised that they haven't actually had a parade when Andy Brown comes to town.
not quite.
Okay, look at that as a way forward. I mean, if Sunderland can actually bid for the tall ships race, then surely, you know, there's got to be a case for Andy Brown. I mean, maybe you should actually change your name to Brune.
Ah, well, yes, there's that.
You know, could simply be a case of the Scottish Sassenach scenario here, that they don't want Mr. Brown, they want Brian, they want Brune, Andy Brune. What do you think, William?
If he changes his accent, he's going to be right in there.
Yeah.
Can you learn it? How long is it going to take, Andy?
Oh, to be honest, I worked there for about a month at a time, and I think towards the end of the month, I'm fairly sure the accent was starting to get a bit of a twang to it, changing, going northwards.
After all, look what happened to Paul Gascoigne when he actually played for Glasgow Rangers. Oh, maybe not. Moving on. Last week, of course, William, we were sharing with you the delights of James Cook and the adventures of James Cook, and of course Askham Bryan and Stewart Park just up the road. Now, Andy is actually part of that land called Hartlepool. Exactly. Obviously, Radio Hartlepool's main engineer and a whole variety of other things as well. So is there anything you'd like to ask a resident of Hartlepool that you've always secretly wanted to sort of say, is it just an urban myth about hanging monkeys? Is it, you know, do they really sort of, is the football team really as bad as it seems to be? Is it catapults down the league? You know, anything on that basis. William, the floor is yours.
Okay, tell us about guacamole. Is that a true story, or is that an urban myth?
Guacamole. Now, this is.
You don't know the guacamole story.
No, you've completely caught me there, Bill. This one is.
I've got you a good one.
Yeah, definitely.
Your MP, what was his, come on, Mandelson.
Oh, yes.
He is doing, this must be 20 odd years ago, when he was doing the rounds during election. And he goes into a fish and chip shop. And he says, and I'd love, yes, fish and chips, or a fish supper, please, and one of your lovely pots of guacamole, which was, in fact, mushy peas.
Yes. Yes.
What do you reckon?
Fantastic.
Cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Loads of classic quotes come out of Hartlepool. That wasn't one that I had at the top of my list, to be honest, but I'll definitely be adding that one.
Curiously enough, somewhere in the system, and as yet I've not managed to rediscover it, etc., there is a Peter Mandelson line in which he actually utters the words, how good is that?
Oh, dear.
It comes out from the old Radio Hartlepool thing. We've taken it from the whole sort of system, but it's wonderful. It's a catchphrase that Jason Anderson, the breakfast show host and manager of Station Hartlepool, regularly likes to use. How good is that?
It's been well coined.
Exactly. Well, it obviously helped Peter Mandelson's political career no end. Maybe not. Excellent. Any other questions, William?
Did he become Lord Mandelson of Hartlepool, and does Mandelson still have Hartlepool connections, or has that all long gone by the board now that he's become a Londoner?
Yeah, you're testing the knowledge here today, but I don't think there's any remaining connections. Not that I'm aware of, at least. But I'm sure someone will correct me over the course of the next few days if I have made an error there.
Yes, he might have decided to secretly just step aside now that he's actually carried his Hartlepoolness across the base, etc. And apparently, in case you're wondering, Bill, the monkey hanging story was also an urban myth. It was just called by the battles between the north side people and the south Carver people.
It is.
I thought they were very proud of the monkey. I mean, I don't remember the football team. The mascot. It's called Hangus, and he's a monkey.
That's right. Yes, it's a very strange thing. I've got to say, I'm not from Hartlepool. I moved to Hartlepool. Just quickly putting that little
nicely
disclaimer
said,
in there. Yes,
nicely
yeah.
said,
but
exactly.
Yes, it's a strange scenario where it is something that everyone in the town is very proud of, until you actually ask the story and realise what the story
exactly.
involves, and then it doesn't
seem
quite as...
Last week, I think I caused a minor surprise with Bill by actually engaging with some football chants. This week, I shall actually again reveal the fact that I spent 4 years of my early scholastic life in Hartlepool at a convent called St. Joseph's Convent. Now, I've been demolished, but those nuns did a fantastic job. They moulded the boy broadcaster you see before you.
Excellent. You see, so it's a very cultured place. If you strip away the monkeys and the Mandelsons.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not talking about Peter Tork and Mickey DeLance, etc. It's a different line of monkey from that point of view. William, hopefully, once again, we provided a modicum of education and insightfulness which you might like to apply in one of your upcoming novels.
Absolutely. As always, thank you so much.
So, any questions you'd like us to put to Randy Nowat, Bob Dylan's music publisher and one of the first surf musicians in Los Angeles, who's coming up in a matter of moments after we've actually had the second, well, in fact, the fourth episode, although technically it's episode 3, part 2, I know, it's confusing, of Marauder. Any questions from you to Randy?
Yeah, about Bob Dylan and picking up his Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I suppose we better ask him if he fancies being, if there's a chance that Bob would take over as poet laureate.
Oh. I mean, sort of replacing Carol Ann Duffy and various other folk within the whole field. Okay.
I mean, we've been sticking with Brits for a while, but maybe we could have an American.
See what you've done there. Special relationship, shoulder to shoulder. Brilliant. Andy, do you remember those last two questions which William has often criticised me about for being far, far, far too stereotypical and really is... Technically, I thought it was such a long time. Has he had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat? Had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat, Bill?
Yes, I guess it has been reasonably interesting. Thank you so much for asking.
Marvellous. And will you be coming back again in the very near future?
Just as soon as you ask me. Thank you so much.
And dedicated to fathers who train their children to put the phone down on unwanted callers all over the world.
She's crazy like a fool.
What about Daddy Cool?
around buckles and listen. I want no problems. We're gonna head out to sea, by guess. And by God, nice and quiet. We'll decide navigation at dawn. No chewing the fat. I'm only gonna say this once, and there'll be no noise or talking. Got it? Follow orders, and you're all mute.
Aye, got it. Speak up, matey. You listening to the captain's orders?
I'll do the talking, Crane. First up, Obnox ain't gonna be doing nothing, so dump him below. He can sleep it off. He's a ringing doubloon, show on the outside and rotten on the inside. Oh, and while you're below deck, lock the gruelmaker in the galley. I don't want him stirring the pot yet. I'll deal with him later.
Aye, aye, Captain. Consider it done. If that cook wakes up, he'll be sleeping again fast with a bull's eye crunch.
Scapegoat. Away anchor and get it in fast. No noise. You ain't putting on no show. Kid an Italian. Remove the hatch and pull in the gangway. Yeah, you'll have to show the gigolo, kid, because he's clueless what I'm saying.
I can do it, Captain. Yeah, we can do it. I'm with you, Italian. You don't know what's going on, but I'm with you. Strong we are. Ain't we, Italian? Look, Captain. Muscles. Show him, Italian.
Put a sock in it, kid. Flash. Feeble. Attic. Up the mast. Drop all sails.
No problem, Captain. Sails it is. I'll be up there in a flash. Fast flash dash. That's me. Know the clipper well. Can see blind, if you know what I mean. I'll get a wriggle on, a head start. Won't make a sound. You know you can trust me with an order. Aye. See you on board, mateys.
Yeah, flash. Like a squirrel running up a tree, pooping as you go with fear. See blind, more likely leap, no look. Phoebes and I'll get the job done with no hitches, Captain. You can rely on us. We're downwind, so fly by nights will see us out to sea. No needing all the sails. That wind's blowing gales, and we'll be well out to sea before you know it.
Now hang on a minute. You ain't speaking for me, Attic. I don't do masts or sails. Heights don't do well with me, especially after a skinful. There must be something top deck better for me, Captain. Solid footing, if you know what I mean. Think of me age, bones and aches. Nah, not doing no heights. I don't know about this. Maybe I'll not go. Suppose I got no choice. Maybe my mark. And that's me word. But think about what I said, Captain. Please.
I'm calling the shots, Feeble. Yeah, well, you can release the ropes for cast-off. Crane, watch him. You better be slick about it, or you're gonna be shark bait. Okay. Now quiet, the lot of you. What do you hear? That's right. Nothing. Listen. Who did that? You pushing your luck? Speak up. Who was it?
Sorry, Captain. It was me.
Fanny cooks ever so well. Your innards like to express a little appreciation for the cook. 2 sous he had. There's plenty of appreciation to be expressed. As for the anchor, you won't hear a thing. No ching, ding, clink, or anything.
That's it. I've heard enough. Get moving. And don't forget, mute. You're mute. So keep your gob shut and get on with it.
What's going on? You ain't leaving without me. Who are you, kid? And who's your mate? Wait. I'm boarding. Leave that gangway. Okay. Now, pull it in. Here. I'll help ya. Clubfoot said, leaving at dawn. What's going on? Loggy, I'm here early. Stupid man he is. Says one thing and does another.
I'll handle this, kid. I am captain, and we're heading off. Clubfoot's taking a rest. There was nothing said about you. Who are you?
Fetchikinas, captain. A new crewman on Clubfoot, Cleaver. My first sail with him. Aya will drop me keep below and help out where I can. Plenty of experience, captain.
I'll take the wheel. Easy does it. And we're off. And let's hope for smooth sailing and booty find. Aye, the thought of it. Thinking like a rich man's mind, and the picture is certainly glorious. Ha 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 ha.
Very scary. And we will try and hopefully have another episode of Marauder in the very near future. I know we've had a little summer special there. That was episode 3. Part 2. Will we get to part 4? Hopefully. Exciting and amazingly wonderful sound there of the Challengers with Mizilu. And yes, as promised, we're finally able to welcome one of the fantastic first surf musicians in the globe, from the delights of the West Coast, etc., to the airwaves once again. It's a fabulous Heidi Hi and hello to the amazingly talented Randy Nowat. How are you, Randy?
I'm well, thank you. And how are you there?
Delighted to touch base with your good self. Randy, first question. I've got to jump into this with respect to your website, which is a superb website that we're having a look at. Is that a wonderful, gigantic shellfish that you're actually holding on the front cover there?
That is. That's a big lobster, Pacific Coast lobster. They don't have claws. The California ones are... That was a big fish.
I thought so. I mean, there we are. That's a significant lobster there that Randy actually has in his hands. It's essential.
For a week.
Exactly. It's just a whole new world. Introduce you to one of our fine co-presenters today. That's Andy Brown.
Hello. Hello, Andy. How's things with you over on the sunny side of the planet?
Well, it's getting sunny. It's morning here in California, and I'm about to go do my farm chores. Feed the horse, feed the emus and the alpacas, and and the baby peacocks and the baby chickens. A lot of farm chores in Malibu.
Oh, great. What a lifestyle. That does sound good.
It does work from that point of view, but roll back the years. I mean, I can't believe 50-odd years, 60 years, well, 50 years, five decades, and the Surf City actually occurs from that point of view. When you were first getting together with the Challengers, again, actually, another quick question. Was your name the Challengers by any way influenced by the DC Comics Challengers of the Unknown?
I don't think so. We started out just playing as friends, and a couple friends got together, and I was playing records for 8th grade Coke dances, and I asked them to play for the dance, and they did, and I mentioned to the drummer, I said, I'm thinking of playing guitar, can I be in the band? And he said, no, we got two guitar players, but we could use a bass player. So I saved my money and bought one, and started playing with the band, and we worked as the Bel Airs, which was a car name. It was the Bel Air Hotel in Bel Air, California, and my mom had a 58 Bel Air Chevrolet, so, and that's what I gave the drummer a ride around in, is in my 58 Chevy Bel Air.
I mean,
we went and recorded a song called Mr. Moto, sort of named after a professional wrestler, Mr. Moto, and got local play and started to get a lot of radio play, and then there was some who was in charge of the group and whose parents were involved. You know, we're 14, 15, 16 years old. So we ended up dividing the group in half, and the drummer who wrote half of Mr. Moto and the keyboard player and I started a new group with two new guitar players called, not the Bel Airs, but we worked as the Bel Airs for about 6 months until we came up with the name The Challengers. And that was a Chrysler car. It was just the name that seemed to work at the time. We were just looking for a new identity that would separate us. We let the other guys keep the Bel Airs name. So I'm not sure how exactly it came out. We tried a bunch, but we're in high school, and what do you think of this? What do you think of that? What do you think of that? Okay. And by default, we became the Challengers band.
I'm glad you mentioned that about the car, Randy, because in the back of my mind, I was thinking Dodge Challenger for some reason. So I'm wondering that. Yeah. So that's where the link into automotive comes in.
Cars. Chrysler was famous for its Hemi heads, the hemispherical cylinder heads, and it was the Chrysler cars are still highly collectible muscle cars from that period.
Funnily enough, I drive a more modern Chrysler myself over here in the UK.
It was destiny. Yeah.
Coincidence.
Destiny going to get Randy together with Andy. You know, Andy and Randy connected around the whole thing. It's R.W. Sanders obviously acting as the intermediary in this thing, which is wonderful. We're going to take a mini musical break, if that's okay now, Randy, and I'm going to ask you which one you'd like us to go for the listener. We can offer either the Challengers and Bulldog, which I think is a nice little number, and kind of British in its own way, really, sort of bulldog from that point. Or alternatively, we can have your incarnation of Apache, and of course many people will be familiar with the Shadows version of Apache.
Let's do Apache. I just love Apache.
Well, in which case, Apache is what you requested. Apache is what we've got.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kingdom, it's a bit like being down in Torquay or possibly in Saltburn by the sea, where surfers actually take place in all manner of aspects from that point of view. We're speaking to the great Randy Nutt in Los Angeles, and that was, I mean, did that take you back, Randy, to the sort of days of the heady 60s and so on, and the man moon shots and all the rest of the bits and pieces?
Yes. I love that song, and I love that version of it, and I love the Shadows version of it, and it's just a great song.
Yeah.
Most of the people in America didn't hear the Shadows' work because our countries were so far apart. They're instrumental, so we often would play them, and it was kind of a tribute and an opportunity for them to be exposed in the American market.
Did you ever meet Hank Marvin at all? Have you met Hank Marvin?
I have not.
No? Well, obviously you have to set that up in some way, shape or form, but I'm sure we could work through that. Andy, you got a few questions for Randy about surf music and pioneers and other bits and bobs.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I didn't know an awful lot around surf music other than the very popular songs that I think most people know from the Beach Boys and their contemporaries. But looking up, a name kept coming up over and over when I was doing a little bit of research, and it was a guy called Dick Dale. Is that someone that you recognize from the genre?
Yes, Dick was playing down in the Newport area at the Rendezvous Ballroom fairly regularly at that time in a big dance hall. The Rendezvous could hold about 2,000 people, and he would regularly get, 600 to 1,000 people in there. It was left from the big band era, where you'd have a 20-piece dance band like Stan Kenton, or they'd come rolling through these big old dance halls, and they'd play with acoustic instruments. And when we started playing with electric instruments, electric guitar and bass, and amplifiers made by another local, Leo Fender, we could fill those rooms with five guys or six or seven guys and drew an audience of our age that liked to dance. So what became known as surf music was basically dance music that we played, like our first album, Surf Beat, is a 45-minute set, 20 minutes to a side, about of songs, six songs that we'd play on each side that we'd play, and the kids would dance. And so if the kids weren't dancing, or you were either not playing the right song, or you weren't playing it well enough. So when we went in to record that album, we just set up on the studio floor and played, and we did the whole album in 3.5 hours. And the only reason it took that long was because we had to do a mono version and a stereo version, because you could buy a mono album for $249 and the stereo was $349, so they were two separate versions.
Wow. And
Dick Dale was quite good at the time, and we ended up replacing him at the Rendezvous Ballroom. We'd worked there occasionally too, and we worked at the Aragon Ballroom and the Hollywood Palladium and the Pavilion Ballroom on the Huntington Beach Pier, so we were all working different jobs, but the same basic audience.
So as you progressed your music, what was it that then you started to shape you into the the publishing side, moving away from actually being on the guitars yourself and performing and moving into the publishing arena?
Okay. Well, the dance music sort of changed when the Vietnam War got intense and the draft started, and sort of in the middle of the 60s, all of a sudden you're asked to go off and fight in a war and kill people you don't know, and, you know, kids were going, what? You want me to, what? I have to do that? And people were pretty upset. And so there was a lot of controversy, and basically, let me step back a little bit before that. The British invasion occurred, and that was the Beatles and the Stones and all of that. And when they came into the U.S. market, they pretty much dominated about half of the radio play charts. So the local American bands, the doo-wop bands and the rock bands, the rockabilly, radio play is advertising for your live concerts. And if you're not getting radio play, you're not advertising the concerts, you're not selling tickets, you're not getting booked. So a lot of the bands had to change and adapt, and some of the singers, like those great black groups, they just sort of went out of business. So after the British invasion took over, then we'll jump back up to what I was talking about, the draft. Mm-hmm. People were looking, our generation was looking for surf bands basically with a message. And they were right up the coast there in San Francisco. That's when the San Francisco sound started. And so we hear those bands, and they play about the same skill as us, but, you know, some better, some worse. And so that dominated the charts. Then when the draft came, a couple of our members had to go into the military, so we had some time off, and I had been invited to visit Ravi Shankar in India, so I had a little time, so I headed off. And it took a long time to make it around the world. And when I got back, that's where I met George Harrison. We were both guests of Ravi Shankar's in Bombay in 1966. When I got back, our drummer was working for MGM Pictures, 20th Century Fox, and United Artists in their music publishing. And he offered me a job in publishing, so I learned about music publishing. Excuse me. And that's how I learned about publishing. When I was doing that in New York, I scored Goodbye, Mr. Chips. I don't know if you know that movie.
A classic with Peter O'Toole. The updated version as opposed to the Robert Donat one. I must admit as well, Randy, number 21, very significant number, because that is your number on the Sgt. Pepper's album cover. That's where, just next to Tony Curtis in many ways, which is very good, etc. What was the process? Did you get a request saying, Randy, could you actually be on our next album cover?
No. No, I met George when we were students of Ravi Shankar's in Bombay, and he asked for a photo, and I said a photo, and this was like, there were several versions of the Sgt. Pepper's cover, and this one appeared in New Zealand. It's not on the regular, Dion is in that spot on the American version, but this was, George had that wonderful dry sense of humor. While we were there, he was working on a song, Life Goes On Within You.
Well, Within You, Without You.
And Without You.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, George financed the Monty Python movie.
Yes, yeah.
With his sense of humor. So he was kind of always doing practical jokes and nice things and just a generous, fun person. So that's a unique cover from the generally released version of the Sgt. Pepper's album cover. That was a total surprise to me and totally delightful.
Well, I mean, we will be having a chat with Louise Harrison in the very near future, so have you met George's sister? Presumably you have through your contacts and so on.
I have not met her yet. We're supposedly going to meet and talk soon, but I haven't done that yet. Also, not to skip through the MGM period, but I also did the scoring for Zabriskie Point. I don't know if you saw that movie.
Again, another classic with Sean Connery, I believe.
Oh, it was a great Zabriskie Point.
Yes. Oh no, but it was a great movie. But yeah, I have heard of it. It's the good boy, Mr.
Oh, you got to see it because it was Antonioni's only first American and only American film for MGM. He didn't quite understand the American market musically, so MGM had a lot of people that were from the Judy Garland era, the Wizard of Oz period, and so they didn't know what to do. so they let me pick the music for it. And so I used Jerry Garcia and a bunch of other people. I found in a group on Harvest Records out of Italy, and I used one of their songs for the slow motion explosion of the house at the end. It's a song called Be Careful with the Axe, Eugene.
Yeah, you're absolutely
right. That was America's first exposure to Pink Floyd.
I think that Phil Lynas, our mutual friend, colleague, and film director, would have been astonished that I hadn't actually sort of got Zabriskie Point. Zabriskie Point, 1970 American drama film, directed, as you rightly said, by Michelangelo Antonioni. So genius stuff. Unfortunately, an overwhelming commercial failure. But never mind. It's, you know, it'll come good in the fullness of time. You know, that's the important thing.
Well, if you look at it now, it's still a strong movie. It's absolutely stunning to look at. And the problem was it was Easy Rider was done afterwards but got released sooner. So Easy Rider sort of took that forefront of that genre, even though it was done later. It was released sooner. So I would take another look at Zabriskie Point. It's just absolutely every one of Michelangelo's opening shots is like a photograph to be framed in fine art. And the historical images in there of Los Angeles and different places are just absolutely stunning. It's certainly a cult classic in the United States, and it's certainly worth another look.
Randy, you've convinced me, and probably the citizens of the British Isles and Europe as well. Andy, any further questions or thoughts?
Absolutely. No, I'm fascinated by the background and the career that you've had, Randy, and in awe of the people that you've met. And is there any one person in particular? I know you've mentioned George just before. Is there anyone that stands out that you
is that Mr. Zimmerman, as nice as it seems, basically, Robert Zimmerman, since he got his Nobel Prize for Literature? You know, is he okay, Bob?
Yes. Well, while I was working at MGM, there was a corporate takeover, and I was working on an album with the Challengers album. We were still recording and releasing our instrumentals around the world because we had a large market, kind of like the Ventures did. And one of our guys wanted to do an album of songs, and I said, why don't we do some of these unreleased Bob Dylan songs? So I'm researching unreleased Bob Dylan songs, and I met his manager, Albert Grossman, and Albert offered me a job. And he offered me a couple of times. I've been living in New York. He says, why don't you open an office for us in California? So I said, I can go home? And he said, yes. So I opened an office in California, and the songs that we published were, because he needed help with publishing, he knew management, not publishing, were Bob Dylan's John Wesley Harding, Blonde on Blonde, and The Basement Tapes. So during that period of time, two artists came to Albert for management, which he turned down. One was Three of the Beatles, and after Brian Epstein died, and the other was Jimi Hendrix. And at the meeting with Jimi Hendrix, Albert asked him, why do you want us to manage? You already have a career going. And Jimi said, people listen to my guitar, but I like my words. I think my words are important. I want people to listen to them. So after the meeting, I said, you know, everybody's listening to these unreleased Bob Dylan songs. If you did one of those, I'm sure they'd listen. Maybe they'll listen to all the rest. And he said, well, what have you got? So I made him a reel-to-reel copy of five songs, and one of them was All Along the Watchtower, which is on his Electric Ladyland album. So I would say Jimmy and that song, which I think changed Jimmy's career. You can play that one, All Along the Watchtower, by Jimi Hendrix, and I'm sure people will know it.
Oh, I think we will know that. I mean, I want you with Bob Dylan himself actually lined up for the piece, but Jimmy, we'll work our way through the process. I mean, Randy, I just feel as though we've been blown away by the magic today.
Let's not forget Janis Joplin. I was handling Janis Joplin. I was part of the management until she passed away. So I worked on the Pearl album. We spent a lot of nights in the studio together. You wanted to know the people that...
No, absolutely. Indeed so. I mean, I'm also keen on getting into BBQ Californian lobster and indeed brown Darby Cobb salad. But that's more sort of recipes that we'll go through.
I have not updated that site in about 10 years. If you look on Facebook and type in my name, I'm very public, and I'm sort of writing online in public a book, which will be sort of all those histories. There's Challengers photo albums, there's other music, there's the Hendrix story and the Janis Joplin story and Bob Dylan stories. And
that was something I was going to say, because obviously nowat.com, incidentally, I presume I've been pronouncing the name correctly. It is Nowat.
No, it's always been pronounced Nort.
Nort.
R-T is
glad we got that sorted out at the end of the interview, but that's okay. So Randy Nort, fantastic. We'll get that.
And you might like to listen to Neil Young's Earth album. Running full circle of our conversation here, all of the animal sounds and the farm sounds and the nature sounds on Neil's new double CD, Earth, are recorded here. Neil is my neighbor, Neil Young. And we've been friends for decades, so...
Randy, I knew this was going to be a great interview, and I'm so delighted we managed to touch base with your good self. We've got two final questions for you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us in Britain today? Has it been okay for you?
Yeah, sounds great. We sound like we're neighbors. So what time are you going to be here for lunch and farm chores? I need some help with the bales of hay.
Absolutely.
I think I'd be up for that. It gets into the fire. So the next question is, can we prevail upon your good self to join us again in the very near future and just dig into some of the sort of fabulous stuff there? I think we've just really set an aperitif, really, to keep it alone. It just sort of whetted the appetite there from Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Neil Young, Bob Dylan, and, of course, much more of the Ace Challengers. Will you be kind enough to return with us, Randy?
Oh, I'd love to do that. We sort of sketched out an outline. I'm ready to go. I'm anxious to share.
It'll happen. Fantastic. Randy Nort, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and St. Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Guilty undertaker sighs, the lonesome organ grinder cries, the silver saxophones say I should refuse you. The cracked bells and washed out horns blow into my face with scorn, but it's not that way, I wasn't born to lose you. I want you, I want you, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. The drunken politician leaps upon the street where mothers weep, and the saviors who are fast asleep, they wait for you. And I wait for them to interrupt me drinking from my broken cup and ask me to open up the gate for you. I want you. I want you. Yes, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Fathers, they've gone down. True love, they've been without it. But all their daughters put me down, 'cause I don't think about it. Well, I return to the Queen of Spades and talk with my chambermaid. She knows that she's not afraid to look at her. She is good to me, and there's nothing she doesn't see. She knows where I'd like to be, but it doesn't matter. I want you, I want you, yes, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Now your dancing child with his Chinese suit, he spoke to me, I took his flute. No, I wasn't very cute to him, was I? But I did it because you lied, and because he took you for a ride. Because time is on his side, and because I want you.